Sothno the Slayer by Jeremy D. Farkas, narrated by Tim Menzel and Karen Bovenmeyer. What happens when a man is kept as a beast, when he is stripped of his humanity and forced to rely only on his most base instincts? In the case of Sothno, he became as the beast is, snarling and savage. From his capture as a youth in the jungles of Zultan, he had been trained to fight, to rend, to slay. Diminished was his sense of a life's worth, to a value non-existent. The death of neither man nor beast quavered his soul, for he had no soul to quaver. He was an animal, or so it was said. Dust, darkness, sweat and mildew lorded over all. Faintly, as though muffled behind blocks of stone, came cries of exultation and bloodlust. The clink of chains sounded in the darkness. Upon a low bench in the dismal cell squatted a mighty thewed form, ebon in the darkness. He rumbled silently, his muscles tensing, preparing for what was to come. He had done this countless times. Dimly, he heard the crier announcing the bout to be fought. Three men would be given trial by combat for crimes against the master of the city. In truth, the details mattered little to the man in the dark. He would kill, as was his custom, not venomously, but reflexively. The groaning of ancient timbers was soon followed by the flooding of blinding white light into the moldering pen, as the iron-bound portcullis was raised. He trod forth into the dry expanse of the arena of Al-Sabak. The hot-blooded cries of 10,000 spectators met his ears, and the massive gladiator did what he could to shield his eyes from the dazzling light. The blistering heat bore down upon him, as did the gaze of the audience from their tiered seats above and about the vast fighting pit. All were dressed in brass and jade. The men were mostly bearded, and the women supported the fashionable head wraps of a bar. Before him went the dry, rocky expanse of the encircled battlefield. Strewn about were mangled corpses, splintered weapons, and pools of sticky redness that congealed in the dry dust. The survivors of the previous match were being corralled at the far end of the field into pens of their own by slavers with whips and spears. The gladiator swallowed hard, his throat cracked in dust, his limbs tense with trepidation. No matter how often he did this, there was no adjusting to it. Over the blowing horns and the cries of the onlookers, there grew a chant that he had learned to hate more blackly than he did his captors. Sothno the Slayer. Sothno the Beast. Sothno the Slayer. Sothno the Beast. They cheered. Soon, the whole of the arena was swept up in the excitement. They knew that their Sothno would not disappoint. At the far end of the battlefield, three gates of iron and bronze were raised, and from the dark recesses beyond the portcullises came the challengers. They numbered three, those accused souls, but each looked more than a task for a score of civilized men. Each bore a wild beard of greasy black and had eyes that showed equal parts malice and terror. Sothno would try to be quick. Slowly did that trio advance, before the foremost leapt at Sothno, his fat lips slavering wildly. Above, the auditorium gasped at the animal's speed, not the attacker's, but Sothno's. For the bearded brute's blow met only dusty earth. Before he could reel to make a second attack, Sothno's tremendous fist collided with his skull, right at the temple, producing a sickening crack. The first of the accused fell, unconscious. Now it was Sothno's turn. The other two, one taller and more thickly built than he, the other, short and heavily tattooed, stood back, a second of hesitation playing on their faces. It was all the time the gladiator needed. With the ferocity of a jungle cat, he crouched, took up the broken length of a spear shaft, and rushed the others. Gutturally did he bellow as the point of the fractured shaft embedded into the smaller one's throat. Sputtering streams of crimson dribbled out along the edges of the piercing wood, and as Sothno tore the crude weapon free, it gushed forth in a steady flow. Instinctively, The man clutched at his throat to stop the drainage, though he was powerless to do so. He dropped, dead. Before he could strike at the third, the man had Sothno in a mighty bear hug, his arms pinned to his sides. The crushing weight of the titanic limbs caused him to drop his wooden shard. His feet were lifted off the ground in the hold. Hot breath ran rottenly to Sothno's nostrils, and he kicked his heels wildly into the body of his captor. Sothno screamed, and the audience cheered as the mighty giant bit down with preternatural force into his victim's shoulder, drawing blood and pulling muscle. Over all came the chant again. Sothno the Slayer, Sothno the Beast, rang in his ears like the death knell declaring the fate of a man still living. His heart rattled around in his chest, pumping blood through him with mad ferocity. With a mighty surge of strength, he broke the hold, digging his heels into his biter's groin, sending both earthward. The giant's impact produced a plume of bloody dust, and while he was just getting to his knees, Sothno had come around to his back and leapt upon him. The greasy brawler stood erect, bellowing furiously as Sothno clung to his thick, corded neck. His grip tightened as he brought one hand to seize the bearded chin of his opponent, and with all his might heaved. No lesser a man might have snapped that meaty neck, which broke like a rotten branch beneath the twisting grip of the black slayer. Both fell a second time, though now the drooling corpse was beneath the knees of the victorious gladiator. The entire stadium erupted in a cacophony of cheers and adulation. Sothno's breath was rasping, and his blood-spattered body shook with the adrenaline that coursed through him. He spat blood upon the corpse beneath him, and on trembling legs he stood. Over the cheers, he heard the faint mumblings of his first opponent coming to. Mechanically, Sothno strode over to the supine form of the remaining prisoner and loomed over him for a moment. The man pleaded to Sothno in a language he did not understand. Sothno seized his throat and sought to end him quickly. The last thing he saw in his fading life was the deep scowl of his foe, whose eyes betrayed an interminable sorrow.
"Why do they call him a beast?"
came a voice, husky and mellow. In response, the master of the city-state of Al-Sabak, dressed in his rich purple silks and seated upon his velvet throne, turned his attention away from the aftermath of the match to the Inquisitor. The Inquisitor, a beautiful dignitary from afar called Lady Vissima, stood near his side. She had been looking down from their vantage point in the master's box into the arena, drinking from a goblet of blood-red wine. Her hair was as dark as could be found in any land, and her skin was an ancient porcelain, beautiful, yet marked with the scars of time and hardship. Most remarkable of all her features was the striking coloration of her eyes, which called forth memories of the purest lavenders cast upon the snowy crags of Trollheim when the summer sun set. These eyes turned to the richly clad figure, whose black beard wagged as he spoke. "It is a beast, my love," explained the master, as though it were self-evident. "What more is there to say?" He stroked his perfumed beard of midnight black and gazed upon the noble woman. The sallow, bulbous eyes, set in his wide-set face, regarded her. "Sothno has fought with the tenacity of a wild animal since I brought him to my city. Even his capture cost 10 men. The woman's pale face held firm and stern at the revelation. She was not surprised. Still, the master, called Rahim al-Isaac, told her of his beast. "He has smitten man and animal alike. Whatever I put before him, he kills. I never need to goad the killing, for it is the beast's nature to destroy." A smile curled between the bristles of the black beard. "He brings good business to al-Sabak, though you can see that for yourself." With a gesture, the purple-garbed master indicated the throngs before and below his private theater box, who waved their arms and chanted for Sothno. In the pit, it looked like the slayer was being corralled to one end of the field by warriors in bronze with long spears. "His use is doubly apparent in dealing with any attempts on my life." His companion nodded in understanding. It was common knowledge that Rahim al-Isaac had many enemies in this fair city, a reality that came with holding power such as his. It was also common knowledge that attempts on the master's life were commonplace, though none had come close to succeeding. That is, until this past week, when three rogues stole to Rahim's palace and sought to kill him in his sleep. When the plan went awry, they were detained and questioned. Now they were dead beneath Sothano's feet.
Will a public execution be enough, O wisest of Al-Sabak?
Probed Vizima. I should think so, nodded Rahim. Those who still wish me dead wish to avoid Sothano even more. In time, the rabble will rise again. But experience tells me I have bought us a month of peace at least. With that, he grinned darkly, reaching a lecherous hand out to stroke her side.
I have never seen one of his kind,
winced the dark-haired beauty, rolling the wine in the goblet absently.
Where was he captured?
She wished to steer the conversation back to Sothano. Rahim al-Isaac eyed the foreigner with mild suspicion. Her white silks and sweet scent made her seem dangerously enticing to the master, though he was never one to pass an opportunity to speak of his triumphs, especially his most precious jewel. The beast was found in the jungles of Zoltan, south of the Sea of Sand, though that was some years ago now. A land of giants and monsters, where gods of fire cast stones from the heavens. I'm certain the beast has no memory of the place. It lived without home or hearth in the jungle, eating flesh raw and gibbering incoherently.
I am impressed with his physicality,
smirked Lady Vizima, leaning past the rail of the theater box to get another glimpse of the mighty slayer before he was forced through a door leading beneath the Colosseum. Next came a string of thieves to be stoned, which lost her interest rather quickly. After a time of executions and chariot racing, the Lady Vizima asked Rahim the question that had been stirring in her mind for some time.
How much to buy your Sothano?
In response, Rahim al-Isaac took a date from a platter set between them, bit and chewed, then managed with a full mouth, not for sale. Lady Vizima set her hand upon the master of al-Sabak's shoulder, leaning in so that she might dominate his attention more fully. Rahim could see an intent in those dark eyes, though not the nature of it. Instead, he opted to openly admire her figure from this invasive angle, reaching out a hand to explore further. This she slapped away quickly, and the master's face reddened slightly, his brow creasing. The beast is not for sale, and if we are to be wed by this month's end, you'd better be more accommodating to my desires, O lovely Vizima. The lady sighed and took two steps back. Inwardly, Rahim cursed himself, for though his god was a permissive being, one of his sole tenets was not to take a woman by force. Deeply did he yearn for his bride-to-be, though she continually denied him.
Perhaps a trade, then,
quoth the Lady Vizima.
If I find a beast that can best yours, we will exchange animals.
Rahim looked troubled by this, which prompted Vizima to push further.
If yours is best, you lose nothing. But if mine is best, you get the superior slayer. Either way, you win.
Why all this talk of trade? We are to be one in all things, he said.
I merely aim to make things more interesting.
But what if my beast is slain? What will you get then? Frowned an incredulous master of Al-Sabak. She grinned.
It's a risk I'm willing to take.
As though to seal the deal, she leaned in to him again and gave him a deep, passionate kiss that stole the breath from his lungs. Fine, huffed Rahim al-Isaac, folding his arms in defeat when she pulled away, turning to the races going on far below. The audience cheered triumphantly as one charioteer was thrown from his basket and trampled by a horse not far behind.
I'll need to inspect him up close if I'm to have a fair chance of besting him,
suggested Vizima cautiously. Without verbal response, the master waved his hand in agreement. The darkness blanketed his frame and made him little more than a vague shadow. Every fiber of his being ached, and through his body drained the last remnants of his adrenaline. His body was becoming heavy and unwieldy. It was not a pleasurable sensation, and not just for the physical experience. With silent, undirected prayer, he lamented the fate of the men who fell at his hands. not just those slain this day, but every day since he had learned the law of the pit. The law was simple: slay or be slain. All his life, he had hated violence of any kind, a surprising attribute for one so powerful an edifice. Yet his desperate cling to life was greater than his apprehensions, and so he had risen to the status of a mighty slayer. None would believe it if they were told, but Sathano truly mourned for his victims. None go to the pit willingly. Only by grave misfortune do such battles take place. Grave misfortune and wicked luck for all involved. Still, he did what he had to, and understood that they would have done the same. It was a mutual respect held among men pressed to the brink, where the primal instincts of self-preservation dominated all decision-making. Concluding his prayer, as he had done hundreds of times before, he sat lethargic in the darkness, lids slowly drifting shut, only to flit open once more. He heard movement off in the dark distance. He saw orange light, too. Inwardly, he panicked. Was he to fight again already? He was not ready, emotionally or physically. Wearily, he watched as the light and sound grew, until he saw the point of origin. The source of the light was an open brand, held aloft by a man whose brown plates glinted reflectively in the dark dungeon. Sathano squinted in displeasure at the glaring light of the torch, and eyed the man in bronze suspiciously. His suspicion only grew upon seeing the warrior was not alone. Behind the bronze-clad guardsman stood a smaller figure, a woman of alien appearance to the Titan. Not unbeautiful, but wholly strange to his sensibilities. She was ghostly pale, dressed in fineries astonishing and unknown to him, and with eyes which shone like amethyst in the torchlight. "Stand," ordered the man in bronze, and slowly he stood. His imposing physicality became more apparent with closeness, and both the lady and her escort had to appreciate the primal force exuded by the man in the pen.
"Leave us,"
came a new order, this time from the woman to her bronze guardian.
"I should not be long."
The guard sought to protest, but the lady needed only to raise her hand to deny him. Before leaving, he took his torch to a candle to grant enough light. Then he turned and trod back up the dusty passage, calling back firmly, "5 minutes, my lady." In the dimmer candlelight, the dungeon depths felt more claustrophobic, more malignant, and more alien. Sathano could detect a certain trace of fear in the stranger, but she masked it well. Neither Vissima nor Sathano spoke, simply watching one another from opposite sides of the cell until the sounds of the guard's footfalls vanished into the darkness. When the silence was broken, it was she who spoke.
"You speak the Abar tongue?"
"Some," he grunted. "What you want with me?" He was immediately wary of her presence. Men came to him only to feed him, exercise him, or otherwise prepare him for the act of killing. This girl was clearly related to none of these activities.
"I wished to see you in person, O Slayer."
"Call me Sathano," he urged, a malice twisting his face cruelly. In response, the Lady Vissima narrowed her gaze.
"You do not like your title, then?"
she pried gently. Sathano only shook his head in disgust, forcing the question. "Why are you here, truly? Is this some fresh torment of Alisak?" His brows creased in consternation. There was another long silence, which set Sathano on edge. But it was broken before too long, when Vissima spoke again.
"Do you hate Rahim Al-Asak?"
He gave a curt nod.
"Would you kill him, if given the chance?"
The hairs on the back of his neck stood on end, and every nerve in his body tangled with wild suspicion. This was some scheme of Al-Asak's, surely. When he did not respond, she smiled softly and nodded.
"I see. You are too weary of violence to kill even him."
He shot her a bewildered look. This was indeed his deepest and most solemn feeling, but he felt sure none could have guessed it. Before he could manage a response, the sound of footfalls grew down the dungeon corridor, and Vissima raised her finger to her mouth. Wordlessly, she procured a small velvet pouch from seemingly nowhere, collected a tiny handful of its contents, and blew it in a cloud upon him. It was a white powder, laced with nearly imperceptible crystals, which flitted through the air on her breath, between the bars and upon his flesh. The powder painted his skin ashy gray and made him cough and sputter wildly. Through his coughing fit, he saw her receive her escort in bronze, and watched the two leave him once more to his own thoughts in the deep dark. The days crawled by slowly for Sothenone, who was only turned loose from his sweltering pen to train his body on the order of Rahim al-Isaac. He was relieved that the duty of slaughter had not fallen to him in such a time, and in the great spans that demanded nothing of him, he turned his attention inward and wondered at the nature of things around him. What had the woman wanted with him? He had not had visitors before. Indeed, he knew none in this land beyond those who drilled him or kept watch over him. Something was going on, and it gnawed at the corners of his soul to not know. How could he know? None had any reason to tell him anything, and to question the guards would be fruitless. It had been 10 days since the purple-eyed one cast the salts upon him, and since then he had been put through rigors unfamiliar to him. Not only was his body put to the absolute limit by Kashak the gladiologist during the day, but also at night he was tested. His dreams were filled with two things, wildly different and equally intense. In both instances, he would always wake bathed in sweat, feeling the walls of his cell looming closer upon him than before. The first of these dreams was of the horrible gore of Rahim al-Isaac, splayed beneath him, butchered upon the silks of his palace divan. In the dream acts, Sothenone repaid the wicked Abaran for all the suffering he had caused. Hate flooded his psyche, and as the caged tiger is oft to do, he paced restlessly in his prison cell when he woke from such dreams. The other dreams were of the purple-eyed witch. He was convinced she was of no other profession, watching him in the darkness. She never spoke nor acted, and she was always just visible in the inky blackness of the dream world, nodding to him gently. He liked those dreams far less than those of Rahim. Violence, he could understand, even if he had no lust for it. It was simple, direct, and had clear reason behind it. The Purple Watcher had no such clarity and purpose, and sorcery was vexing to his mind. Inwardly, an inexplicable anticipation came to pass. His skin itched, and always he thought he saw some goblin lurking in the corner of his eye. Sothenone swore an oath to whichever gods of his jungle homeland cared to listen, and prayed for an end to this alien dread. Often he reflected on the fateful day, those many years ago, when the Abar prince came riding through the jungle lands of Zoltan with his troop of hunters. In those days, Rahim was more adventurous, wandering far from his city of Al-Sabak, and was prone to make quick work of the strangers he encountered while abroad. Such was the fate of the Uzuna tribe, whose people were Sothenone's own. It had been a hot day, and at its end, Sothenone returned from the field where he tended the kine. First, he met the scent of smoke, then of charred flesh, then the sounds of shrieks and laughter. Next, he saw smoke drifting lazily among the boles of the ancient, mossy trees. Then he saw the flicker of fire, and men paler than he had seen before, upon the backs of great four-legged beasts, carrying weapons that glimmered in the firelight, and bit like hellfire. His fields were torched, and his animals butchered, the people he'd known all his life scattered to the four winds. The fate of his mother, his father, his sister, his two brothers, all of his people were lost to him, never to be uncovered. And to think of them even this much later would have made the red coals of his soul spark and sputter with animal ferocity, but he couldn't remember any of their faces anymore, only names. It was like the life of another man to him, distant as another world. For that he felt guilt. When the waiting and the sorrow came to be nearly intolerable, he was interrupted by a lesser evil. Guards of the Order of Brass came, brandishing tulwars and whips, and ordered him to stand and be dressed for battle. Already he could hear movement above him, signaling the filling of the arena stadium. He did not fight them, or offer any form of resistance, which made them wary for they expected the caged beast to lash out at whatever came near, considering how long it had been since he'd taken a life. One of the order placed a brass helmet upon his brow, while another strapped a cuirass of tarnished bronze. In his mighty fist they placed the shaft of fire-hardened wood, the length of 1.5 men. Its end was whittled to a spear-like point. Reflectively, his fingers wrapped around the weapon, and the veins and tendons bulged in his wrist as he tested its strength. Already the cheers were beginning to grow above him, and he knew that it was time once more. Again he was led to the great iron-bound portcullis, which creaked and made the dust about them dance. Sothena went out into the blinding light, where the oppressively hot southbourne wind whipped and bit his skin with blistering particles of sand. The seas of onlookers cheered at his arrival, casting to him orchids and yellow lotuses in signs of adulation and goodwill. He did not care. Kicking up dust as he went to the center of the great arena, where he looked up to the master's theater box. In the cool shade he could see the toad-like Rahim seated, fanned with a palm branch held by a naked slave. At his side, much to the slayer's shock and anxiety, sat the enchantress who had visited him these many days ago. Even from so far away, her purple eyes shimmered like witchfire. A knot began to form in his gut, and Sothena wondered at the significance of all of this. To the gods of Zul'tan, and to his fallen brethren and forebearers, he sent out a prayer and raised his spear to signify readiness. In response, the horns blared and the drums thumped mightily, and by instinct, his heart began to pound more heavily. The doors at the far end of the stadium shook and groaned against the frame. The iron which bound the portal strained as though an incredible pressure were slowly being applied to it from the opposite side, and Sothena wondered what manner of opponent was worthy of these unusual circumstances. A gong rang out, and hidden mechanisms which managed the door began to grind to life, raising the portcullis with agonizing speed. The audience had redoubled their chant, and with his own name ringing in his ears, Sothena the Slayer beheld his foe. Cries of terror came from the arena seating, and almost immediately the jovial chants for Sothena turned sour and hushed. Sothena's heart melted into his feet as he gazed upon the physical manifestation of a bygone era, something he would have deemed the ravenings of a madman not but moments before. It trod forth on cloven hooves as black as midnight, kicking stones and sand as it went, propelling a huge body which dwarfed Sothena's own. It stood at the height of 1.5 men and was coated in dark, shaggy fur that wound and twisted into hideous tangles that resembled the mosses of a primordial swampland. Massive arms rolled and twitched, bearing muscles as thick and heavy as the bulk of the greatest python, and leathery fists clenched into hammers that could warp steel. For a head, the thing was remarkably like the wild bison of the distant northlands, though with black horns that reached as far as a man might reach, and with eyes which glowed like hot iron at midnight. A dim recess of Sothena's blasted psyche cried out, demanding action from his body that would not respond. When Sothena did seize control of his faculties, the bison man was already upon him, snorting hot breath which made his skin crawl, and raising mallet-like fists to dash him to the earth. Any longer, and Sothena would have been reduced to a bloody smear. But luck was with him, and he managed to dive sidelong past the beast's massive flank to roll in the dust unscathed. Slowly it turned, and as it did, Sothena was blind with trembling terror. Surely no mortal could survive such a demon's onslaught. And yet, as he set his spear to gore the thing turning about, the same voice called out in the deep recesses of his mind, stronger now.
"Strike the sternum,"
came the echoey message to Sothena's psyche. Looking up at the bullish head of the thing, which faced him fully once more, he caught a glint of lavender light. With a terrific yell, Sothena lunged his spear forth as the beast surged to claim him. The tip of the shaft tore into the flesh of the behemoth, drawing cool, syrupy blood from the wound. Yet the spear did not land true, embedding into the tough tissue of the monster's shoulder. With a grunt, it seized the shaft and snapped it in twain. Both ends clattered upon the dusty floor. Sothano's heart surged to the pit of his stomach. It seized him then, in a vice-like grip, and slowly he was lifted into the air, brought face to face with the ugly thing. Looking into those eyes from so close a distance awakened the animal fear that lurks in all men. The trumpeting of the horns, the snorting of the beast, the cries of the onlookers were muted to him. All he felt was the biting of the claws at his sides, the crushing, inhuman strength at his arms, and the deafening pounding of his own pulse in his ears. Again, he heard the voice.
"Keep calm,"
it cooed. The slayer swallowed hard, setting his face in a primal scowl. He wondered if a second mind was in his own. The monster dashed Sothano to the dry earth, sending up a plume of dust on impact. The wind was nearly knocked from him, and his limbs shook with the force of the throw. Onlookers began to cheer again. The black slayer gasped and sputtered pitifully, hearing over the cheers the dull thud of hooves on the dry earth. Soon, he was again lifted. Once more, he was dashed to the earth, this time supine in position. The hot sun baked his face, though the scorching rays were quickly eclipsed by the bulk of the looming abomination. Again, the phantom whisper came to his mind.
"Strike the sternum."
Gritting his teeth and bracing his arms against the ground, Sothano waited the space of time it took for the leering, demoniacal visage to come close and, with a primal roar, kicked both feet into the monster's chest. The Titan did not anticipate the move and lurched backward, teetered. And in that time, Sothano stood and rushed. His shoulder collided with the monster, sending it tumbling to the earth. With lightning speed, he took up the broken shaft of his spear and brought it down with whistling speed upon the creature. It shattered like glass upon bronze, and thereafter, things turned in the monster's favor. A taloned paw pushed up from the kneeling bulk to grip the now weaponless Sothano by the throat. The digits pricked his skin and drew hot streams of blood all around his neck, painting his dark torso burgundy. His breath began to fail him. Sothano squirmed and tried to cry out, but no sound would escape him. His eyes bulged, and he felt as though he were about to burst. His feet left the earth, and once more he was held up by the bison man, who bared curling tusks in demonic pleasure at his suffering. Blood rushed through his ears, and time began to slow. Stars shot from the edges of his vision, and soon after them came a cloudy blackness, like the night sky, which he had not seen for so many years. With sudden abruptness, the battlefield rose to meet him, and the wind rushed back to his withering lungs. There was much cheering and screaming, and then silence, as blackness took him. The last thing that came to his mind before the nothingness was the little voice.
"Rest easy. We are just beginning."
To hear the rest of this story, visit HeroicFantasyQuarterly.com.